This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The United States has counted its population every 10 years since 1790, but the 2020 census will be slightly different this year. People will have the option to respond online for the first time. Local officials in the Cooley region are already mobilizing to make sure every resident participates in the count. Joining us are several members of local complete count committees. Hetty Brown, Executive Director of Cooley CAP, and Vannalee Vang, Community Empowerment Coordinator for Geishia Incorporated, Hmong Cultural Center. Also joining us is Bob Giblin, Media Specialist for Wisconsin from the U.S. Census Bureau. Bob, I wonder if you could start by explaining what the census is and why we do it.
Sure. The 2020 census is a count of everyone who lives in the United States and its territories. Article 1, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution calls for a complete headcount every 10 years of everyone residing in the United States. As you mentioned, the first census was conducted in 1790. The census counts everyone, regardless of citizenship, race, creed, color, ethnic group, religion, origin, or age. Our goal is to get a complete and accurate count, to count everyone only once and in the right place.
And how will people be notified when they should respond to the census?
For most people, they're going to be mailed a card or an invitation letter starting in about March 12th, and that'll run for a couple weeks. And what's different this year is they're going to be invited to participate by phone or by internet, you know, using their computers. In the past, the census was conducted, you know, either solely by mail or by people knocking at the door to collect information. That will still go on, but what we're trying to do is to get everybody to self-respond as quickly as they can after they receive the initial mailing. And this is going to be easier and more convenient than ever before. Again, they're going to have an opportunity to do this by phone or using their computer and the internet. For most people, it's only going to take about 10 minutes. And there are only 9 questions. So when you think about it, there are fewer than 10 questions. It only takes about 10 minutes, and it's going to have an impact on them and their community for the next 10 years.
Yeah, I want to dig more into the impact of the census, but I wonder, Bob, if you could explain, what are the types of things the census actually asks residents, what information it's gathering?
Sure. Again, there are only 9 questions, although questions 5 through 9 actually pertain to each individual in the household. Basically, they're going to be asked how many people are living in the house, apartment, mobile home, or the residence on April 1st, 2020. That's officially census day. It'll ask whether or not there are additional people staying there, people like grandchildren, related or unrelated children, relatives, non-relatives, people staying there temporarily. It'll ask what kind of residence it is, whether it's a house, apartment, mobile home, or something else, telephone number, and then it'll ask for information about each of the people in the household, what their name is, their sex, their age and birthday, whether or not they're Hispanic, Latino, or Spanish origin, and their race, and that's it. They won't ask anything about Social Security numbers or credit card information or anything like that.
How have these questions evolved over time?
Well, there actually used to be a couple of different forms of the census that people will recall. There was the short form and the long form. And I don't know the exact questions that were on the old short form, but it's very similar to what they're going to be getting this year. And then a certain number of people also received what was called the long form, and people remember that who did that probably remember that that was quite a bit of information. That's been rolled into something different called the American Community Survey. So now people are only going to be getting the short form.
Hetty, I wonder if you can explain what a complete count committee and why, you know, cities like La Crosse or counties like La Crosse County create these committees when the census rolls around.
Complete count committees are committees of people representing government, schools, libraries, social service agencies, faith-based community, a broad brush of people from across the community that have an interest in promoting the census, the importance of the census, and mostly who interact with people who are traditionally undercounted. So, for example, people from racially or ethnically diverse communities who may have limited proficiency in speaking or reading English. Those populations are traditionally undercounted. Children as well as the elderly. People living in poverty, the LGBTQ community, these are all populations of people that have traditionally been undercounted. So the Complete Count Committee is a group of people that come together and plan outreach activities, not only to the broad community, but also outreach activities specifically to engage and educate and assist people in filling out the census who may not otherwise be counted.
Hetty, why did you want to participate on a Complete Count Committee this year?
Well, at CoolieCap, we use census data all the time to determine programs that we need to develop, where those programs should be allocated, funding opportunities for the community to serve people living in poverty. The census collects income and poverty information that is used to determine eligibility for many social service programs. Demographic information is collected so we can make sure that funds and programs are being allocated in the areas that they need to be. And then when we're working on broad community strategies to address poverty, like where should affordable housing be developed or where should other new outreach programs be developed, we use census data to make those determinations. So working with a social service agency, a social service agency here to provide services to people specifically in need. Being part of this effort to get the word out, encourage people to participate is really important.
Mandalee, I wonder if you could talk about why you wanted to participate on a Complete Count Committee this year.
Yeah, I wanted to participate because I know that specifically for the community that I work for, so the Hmong community, we were undercounted in 2010, and I know that the federal government uses census data to fund the social programs, and I know that my community specifically utilizes those social programs, and I know how important it is, and I want the Hmong community counted accurately so the government knows that, like, this is how many people that utilizes these programs that we rely on. And yeah, that's why it was so important for me to be in a Complete Count Committee.
Yeah, you mentioned the Hmong community being undercounted in the last census. Can you talk a little bit about how we know that here in La Crosse?
Yeah, so we know that because obviously the data that was put out doesn't reflect what we see in our community. But we also know that because as an immigrant refugee community, we are scared to complete the census. And I know that it was accurate because even though you have like 10 people living in your household, but you told your landlord that only 4 people are living with you in your household, so you don't count those other family members that live with you. And we saw that as a trend in 2010. And obviously that reflects in the data that was presented as well, too.
Yeah, I want to dig into more of, some of these challenges to getting accurate census data more and later in the program. But Vandalee, I wonder if you could talk about what are some of the top issues you're seeing talked about in the Complete Count Committee that you're a part of.
Definitely messaging. I think we've had a really hard time reaching out to certain minority or immigrant refugee communities. And I think that comes from the fear right now of what's happening. That's been the number one problem. And I think just getting those communities on board has been really hard. I think it all has to do with distrust in government, distrust in government and that big sense of fear. So that's the number one thing that I see that we're having a really hard time right now on our Complete Count Committee.
That's Vandalee Vang, Community Empowerment Coordinator for Geoshia Incorporated, here with us today to talk about the 2020 census. She's joined by Hetty Brown from Cooley Cap and Bob Giblin, Media Specialist from the U.S. Census Bureau. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Hetty, I'm curious what your thoughts are on this issue of potential fear or distrust, getting in the way of a complete count this year. Does 2020 feel different than previous censuses?
I think so. We hear from a lot of the people that we serve a broad concern, especially given some of the conversations that are happening on the national level about citizenship and about government pulling back benefits for people who have participated in certain programs or not, if they have mixed immigration status, for example. So for those populations that we serve, we hear a general mistrust in participating in any government program, census or otherwise, as Vandalee explained. But the populations that are traditionally underserved outside of the immigrant population, for example, the populations that are most impacted by poverty, generally speaking, those populations, are used to having to navigate one difficult system and process after another in order to access services. So then to go in and say, please go online and do one more thing and answer one more question and fill out one more application-like, product, it's just one more thing to stack on their list of other things that they have to do that day, and it can be really difficult. And I also think that a lot of the people that we serve may not have had positive interactions with government agencies in the past, or positive interactions with social service agencies in the past, given whatever their situation is. And so to ask them then to trust, to go online and fill something out with all of their information, it's just a barrier that we have to overcome and explain to them why it would benefit them.
Bob, I wonder how the Census Bureau is thinking about public trust in government, public trust in the census, how you guys are tackling that and hoping to build trust.
Well, there are a lot of ways, and that's actually one of the reasons that make it so important that the complete count committees in the various communities are formed and very active. People tend to trust people who they know, or other trusted voices in the community. And what we're hoping is that, the complete count committees will put together a diverse group representing multiple interests, whether it's faith-based communities, whether it's minority people, even students, because that's an important and also historically undercounted population, college students, and business people, and as well, social services or others, those who have their have their reach into these communities and actually can help build trust for the census. Then, we're also doing a lot with data protection. We know that this is a move to an online or telephone response for many people. And so we're working with, the appropriate, private and government people to try to protect the data. The other thing is, whether they respond online or if it comes down to somebody knocking at their door to collect information, one of the things that's really important to understand is that the Census Bureau and all of its employees are required by law to maintain the privacy of individual census data. Neither the Bureau nor its employees are allowed to share personal information with anyone, and that includes law enforcement and other government agencies. We report on aggregate data, the numbers, but individual data remains private.
Bob, I want to return to this issue of data security, because I think that is really top of mind for people. And with the census providing an online option, I'm sure that's going to be a big question. And so can you speak a little bit more about what the Census Bureau is doing to make sure that data is protected online or even over the phone? We see an increasing amount of fraudulent calls going out to people, and how is the Bureau tackling those issues?
Well, in terms of the data that we collect, we are working with both private industry and also other government agencies to build in the protections that we have. Now, we can do all that we can, but it's still important that people, who choose to use the phone or do it by computer are also, instituting the best practices for their own individual data protection. And so, that's a really big part of it. And, be sensible. Also, watch out for things that just don't sound right. If first of all, the Census Bureau won't be calling you unless perhaps there's some question about something. But, be on the watch. If somebody's calling and asking for information like a Social Security number or for a credit card or for some other personal information that's not, on the census form, that's a pretty good indication that you probably shouldn't talk to them.
Manalee, what are your thoughts on this online option being available for the 2020 census? Are you hopeful that that might boost participation?
Yes, I'm really hopeful that it might boost participation because it's easier access, I guess. But I guess if you don't have internet access, it's also a lot harder because you have to find other resources to combat that. But I also really like the over-the-phone option that they have as well, too, if the internet option isn't, if you don't have internet option, I like the over-the-phone because it has different languages translated for you, and someone will just help you over the phone do the census. But, yeah, I really like the online option. I think it's quick. I just think that some communities may not have access to internet, and that might be a problem or an obstacle.
I want to return to what you said about language being, a factor in all of this. Do we know that language is sometimes a barrier, especially for, populations where English might be a second language?
Yes, that is definitely a really big barrier. That's one of the biggest barriers that I'm facing right now. We're trying to get the census census information out in the Hmong community, especially because a lot of the translated languages that the U.S. Census Bureau has put out is Hmong isn't a part of that or isn't one of those languages. So that's extra work that I have to do to translate materials and then get those materials out or just find words to talk about the census in Hmong, which is really hard because sometimes there aren't words for it, and it's definitely a really big barrier for me.
Can you think of one word that you had to be creative in your translation of?
The word census itself. I think that was there's no Hmong word for it, so I think it's describing it and like talking around the word without actually using the word. So yeah, that was really difficult.
Hedy, what are some of the other barriers aside from language for people participating in the census?
Well, Vandalee mentioned areas that may not have great internet access or populations of people who may not have great internet access. And that's part of the role of the Complete Count Committee as well, is to bring people to the table to say, what community resources do we have to be able to offer that internet access? So, for example, at our last meeting for the City Complete Count Committee, the libraries were represented. And the libraries are partnering with us to have events on Census Day where we can encourage people or even transport people to the libraries to use the computers and turning it into a fun event, a community-based event where people feel welcomed. And that's very important for people, for example, that are experiencing housing insecurity or for the elderly population. These populations tend to use the library to access the internet anyway in a typical day. So using the library system to then educate them on the census, what the census is, why they should participate, and then offering that opportunity on Census Day is critically important.
Yeah, Hedy brings up Census Day. And Bob, I wonder if you can explain kind of what the significance of April 1st is.
April 1st has just historically been the official census day. And you know, long ago, I think that, there was an attempt to try to complete the census all in one day. And of course, you know, our country is a lot bigger now, and we have a lot more populations. And so we use April 1st as the historical reference. But as I mentioned, people are going to be starting to be invited to participate into the census starting about March 12th. And that's going to go on, and they'll receive a couple of invitations. We're hoping to encourage people to self-respond, either by phone or by internet. And then eventually, starting, late March or early April, they'll start to get a mailer. Those who haven't responded online or by phone will start to get a mailer with a paper form. And we know that there are a lot of people who either don't have cell phone access or internet access. And we, very much appreciate the CCCs and their partners with trying to help out those folks. But there are some people who just prefer to respond by mail. And so they'll be able to do that. And then a little bit later, for those who have not responded, then we're going to start to get, knocks on the door from census takers or census enumerators who will try to get that information personal, from them and, person to person. And that's going to go on for a while. So, April 1st is the historic kind of reference day, but the actual window of time is a lot wider than that.
You know, we've been talking a lot about getting people to respond, and Hedy, you've touched on this a little bit, but I wonder if you could really just talk about why it is so important to get people to be counted in the census survey.
Well, there's a number of ways that census data is utilized, not just to determine funding appropriations. So billions of dollars of federal funding is distributed to our communities based on census data. So bringing resources into our communities to support our communities is critically important. But it's also used in a number of other ways. For example, it's used to determine the number of representatives we have in Congress. It's also used to determine district maps for state and local government as well. So making sure that we are properly represented in local, state, and federal government, the census comes into play. A couple of other ways it's used, voting. We advocate for equity in voting and making sure that we have fair voting practices and fair elections. Well, census data is used to determine voting precincts and used to determine where polling stations should be so that everybody has fair access to voting and that voting access isn't skewed for one population over another. I mentioned earlier income and poverty data or demographics that's collected through the census is used to determine eligibility for many social service programs. So there's just this broad brush array of areas that census data is used, and census data and collection is something that impacts each and every one of us in the community. There's not one population or one person that is excluded. For each person in our community, there's estimates out there that for each person counted, it's about $1,000 to $1,900 each year for each person counted that comes into our community for these services.
Yeah, Vannalee, what are your thoughts on the importance of the census and how it can really cost our community to be undercounted?
Yeah, I agree with exactly what Hedy said. It's so important, and I think the political representation is also really important that she brought up as well, too. But yeah, I just agree with whatever Hedy just said. Everything's good.
Vannalee Vang is Community Empowerment Coordinator for Giachia Incorporated. She's here with us today to talk about the 2020 census and why it's important that every resident of the Driftless area and beyond participate in the survey. She's joined by Hedy Brown from Cooley Cap and Bob Giblin, Media Specialist for Wisconsin from the U.S. Census Bureau. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on the 2020 census. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the 2020 census. This will be the first year that people can respond to the survey online, and local officials are already gearing up to make sure every resident responds. The count will influence how much federal funding is allocated to Wisconsin and to different communities over the next decade. Joining us are several members of local complete count committees, Hetty Brown, Executive Director of Cooley Cap, and Vannalee Vang, Community Empowerment Coordinator for Giashia Incorporated, Hmong Cultural Center. Also joining us is Bob Giblin, Media Specialist for Wisconsin from the U.S. Census Bureau. Bob, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about what participation is usually like for the census. Does the Bureau have a goal for participation, maybe a percentage of the population?
Well, our goal is to get a complete and accurate count, and that means we count, as I mentioned before, everyone once, only once, and in the right place. Now, Wisconsin historically has done very well. In fact, in the last census, we led the nation in terms of response among all the states in terms of participation in the census. That said, though, while we're doing pretty well, we're about 80%, maybe a little bit higher. Our real goal is actually to get 100%, and that's one of the reasons why we're trying to reach out and work with the complete count committees as well as others to try to make sure we do a better job of capturing some of these hard to count or undercounted populations from the past. While our state did well overall, we did have some pockets that fell below that, so we're working hard to try to catch the people in those pockets.
That's interesting that Wisconsin did so well. What factors do you think maybe helped our state, have a higher participation than other states?
It's really hard to tell. On a personal level, being from Wisconsin, I think it's because we have a state that, people are patriotic and understand the importance of participating in the census. And in general, a lot of people who are trying to do the right thing and who are trying to do the best that they can for their communities.
Are there any particular challenges that the Bureau is paying attention to this year when it comes to, looking at participation?
One of the big things this year is trying to enhance our response from people, as we mentioned, who are either hard to count or were undercounted in the past. And Wisconsin, actually, when you look at the people who may make up these hard to count populations, Wisconsin actually has a lot of them. One may be young children or children living with grandparents or splitting time between parents in a separated household. Sometimes people think, one of the people with the children may think it's the other's job to count them, and they don't talk. And our bigger challenge is to make sure that they're counted somewhere. And even if they're double counted, there are ways to clean that data, and fix that. But you also have college students, immigrants, farm workers, certain faith-based groups, homeless, senior citizens, veterans, or even millennials. And then in Wisconsin, another big group is snowbirds, people who spend part of their time in Wisconsin and part of their time out of state. So it's really important for everybody to be counted, either where they live most of the time or where they are on April 1st. Everyone's participation is important and essential to shaping the future of the community.
Hetty, I wonder if there are particular challenges or factors that need to be taken into consideration when we look at our rural communities? You mentioned internet access earlier. I wonder if there are others.
Yeah, and I think that I want to go back to something Bob said about shaping the future of the community. And this is specifically important for the rural community because census data is used not just to determine how much federal funding comes in or fair elections, the things that we've talked about, but it's also used by the business community to determine where they might build a new manufacturing unit or expand their headquarters into, which can bring a lot of jobs. And I know that the rural communities in the Cooley region are especially struggling with attracting a workforce and attracting families into those communities to work. And there may be businesses, or there may be businesses interested in coming to rural Wisconsin, but they may not be sure that they have the workforce that they're going to need. That is also why, especially in the rural communities, it's important to be counted, because you want to attract business and industry. You want to attract jobs and other infrastructure, healthcare, schools, and so forth. But to do that, we have to have a proper count of who's there and what the potential is to grow. This data may also be used by the business community and social service community to determine future programming or future growth. For example, in Wisconsin, the white population is still the predominant population, but looking at the last census and trends from data collected since, we know that racially and ethnically diverse populations are the fastest growing population in our area. So if I'm a business or a social service agency, I could use that information to look at how I'm recruiting and hiring the future workforce. What types of programs or services do I need to address, not just the population needs now, but into the future? So I think when we, you know, whether we live in a more populated area or a rural community, all of these things are really important if we're looking to shape the future of our community.
Are there things that you are thinking about when it comes to being on a complete count committee to reaching out to these rural communities to make sure that they're then counted?
Yeah, what's really neat about the complete count network is that there are complete count committees everywhere. The city of La Crosse has one. The county has one. Monroe County. There are efforts to get complete count committees started in Vernon County, Monroe County, and every single county or populated area, they want a complete count committee. That makes it really easy for us to network together and determine how best we can reach out. The diversity within the complete count committees is also really important because we all have our community connections. Each person are, you know, on the committee or also on other committees or other boards. And so it makes it a really neat way to connect with one another, share ideas. And then we have tremendous resources from the Census Bureau who come to these meetings and offer resources, promotional materials, guidance. We receive a report every complete count committee meeting that we have on what other complete count committees are doing so that we can partner up. So it creates an interesting network to make sure that we are covering every angle that needs to be covered.
Vandalee, we touched on this earlier in the program about some distrust in government that could be affecting census participation this year. And I think some people might say part of what has contributed to that distrust was a conversation about adding a citizenship status question to the 2020 census. A federal court did block that question, so it will not be on the census. But Vandalee, I wonder if you could talk about maybe how that debate influenced the way communities in La Crosse are talking about the census this year.
Yeah, so I think even though there is no citizenship question on the census, there's still that, well, what if, right? Like, well, okay, then where is our information going? Like, if it's going to the U.S. Census Bureau, are they going to share it? Where is it going? I think there's still that. I think communities that I've talked to, some of them still don't know that the citizenship question isn't on the census anymore. And then if, and then whenever I tell them that it's not, they're like, well, you never know, right? Like, what if it happens and it, I get one and there's the question is on there. But yeah, I think it's hard to get your community out of that fear of filling out the census, even especially when that question was going to be on the census. It's hard to get them out of that. And I've been having difficulties with that as well. But yeah.
Yeah, Vannalee, I know Geisha has already done a lot of work to promote the census already. And so I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what you guys have been doing to promote this survey.
Yeah, so we've been, so we're part of a coalition, and our coalition members are sister organizations from around the state of Wisconsin, so Madison, Freedom Inc. from Madison, Whole American Women's Association from Milwaukee, and then Black and Brown Women Coalition in Eau Claire. And what we've been doing is we've been tabling at various Hmong New Year events or tournaments around the state of Wisconsin. We just have a booth. Usually we try to get people to pledge to complete the census so that we can collect their data or their phone numbers, and we can call them to remind them, or if they need assistance, we can direct them to their nearest coalition or the nearest agency that would help them. That's something that we've been doing. And then I know that in 2020, we're going to start going around to Canvas in certain communities and talk more about the census. And we're also going to hold community education events as well too. Just talking about the census and then having more community education events after that to help people either direct them to the right place to get them help to fill out their census, or if there's a language barrier, we would assist with that as well too.
Hedy, have you seen other organizations in our area doing this type of work to really promote the census?
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of social media activity early on, talking about the census, speaking about the census is a very positive forward movement that people can be part of, which is really, really exciting. I know at Cooley Cap and many community action agencies around the state, we're spending a lot of time training our board of directors, training our staff, so that every conversation with clients or in community meetings can include a census conversation. The National Community Action Partnership is an organization that helps support community action agencies like Cooley Cap. We get weekly emails updating us on census activities, providing tools and resources. And I know there are a number of toolkits out there. The state of Wisconsin just launched a website called WeCount. It's wicount.wi.gov, and it's a website with a tremendous amount of resources and education. There's a video from the governor talking about the census. So whether it's national or local nonprofit organizations, state government, or local community, and we're seeing a lot of activity, and that's only going to ramp up even more as we enter the new year.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. We're talking about the 2020 census. What's different for this year's census, and why should residents respond? We're here with Hedy Brown from Cooley Cap and Vannalee Vang from Geisha Incorporated, both members of local complete count committees. We're also here with Bob Giblin, media specialist for Wisconsin from the U.S. Census Bureau. Bob, you mentioned that one element of the census is the Bureau, hire people in local communities to, go out and, at some point go door to door to make sure that people are participating in the survey. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about some of the people that do that work in communities, who you reach out to, who's typically hired.
Well, thanks. That's a really important part of the effort. And, like I said, what we're hoping to do is encourage people to self-respond, first either by phone or by internet. But we do realize that some people won't or can't do that and would rather have somebody knock at the door. So one of the things we're doing is we are recruiting thousands of census takers, and we need people from all over the country, but all over Wisconsin, to fill numerous temporary positions. And one of the things that's important is that most of these census taker jobs are in local communities, and that makes them more recognizable. We announced last week, actually, that the average wage of census takers in Wisconsin has been increased to a range of $17 to $24 per hour. And we have a lot of positions that would appeal to a lot of different people. There are flexible work hours, daytimes, evenings, weekends, things that may appeal to farm families or farm workers, those seeking just part-time or extra income, veterans, retirees, senior citizens, college students. High school students can even apply. They can be under 18 to apply, but they have to be 18 by the time they start work. Then we also need people with non-English language skills. In particular, in your area, we need people with Spanish and Hmong language skills. So there are a lot of opportunities, but the important thing is these are jobs that are available in the local communities.
Is there a reason the Census Bureau raised the wage of these census workers in Wisconsin?
Yes, there is. You know, one of the things we're trying to do is to be competitive and make it attractive. And but Wisconsin is a state that has a very low unemployment rate. There are a lot of people looking for workers, and we're feeling the effects of that a little. So we goosed it up to make it more competitive. One thing I also forgot to mention, if people are interested in census jobs, please go online to 2020census.gov/jobs, or they can, you know, check out any of the Census Bureau's Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn pages, or usajobs.gov.
You know, I wonder if that is something different this year, just the competition from the job market. And, you know, I wonder if it also goes back to maybe some people not wanting to participate in the census or anxiety about participating in the census. Could that be affecting people's desire to want to, you know, take on this role of being a census taker?
I don't know if I have an answer to the individual motivations, but I think you know, Wisconsin is in line with a lot of the other areas where unemployment is low and competition for workers is high, and I think that's the dominant factor.
Hedy, as a member of the Complete Count Committee for the City of La Crosse, you know, you've talked a lot about the you know, why that information is important to organizations like yours. But I mean, for the city itself, you know, why does the city need this, a complete count in La Crosse? You know, what are the impacts of not getting a complete count?
Well, I'll give an example. And I know you've done programs on the need for affordable housing in the city of La Crosse. That's a common topic that I hear about when I'm in the community. There was a recent fair housing analysis done in the city that showed that there's a lack of affordable housing. Well, if you look at that one issue, the census impacts that issue in a number of ways. First of all, the census data shows us where there are gaps in affordable housing, where are there populations of people that are struggling to find affordable housing? So where do we need to put affordable housing? Census data can be used to determine how much of federal or state investment needs to come into the community in order to build the affordable housing infrastructure or provide housing subsidies for people. Census data is used then to determine where community amenities and infrastructure needs to be invested in, like schools, transportation, like bus lines, road improvements, other community amenities. And then when we look at affordable housing and the ability for a community to invest in affordable housing, where that affordable housing goes, who has access to that affordable housing, that all comes down to policymaking. And the census is used to determine our representation in local, state, and federal governments. So if you take an issue like affordable housing without a complete count, without every resident of the city being counted, it's going to drastically impact where, how we facilitate, you know, where affordable housing is, how we facilitate it, how we fund it, and what policies are being developed to make sure that everyone has fair and equitable access to affordable housing.
How do you think the La Crosse area and really just kind of really the Driftless area in general, how do you think our region does when it comes to the census, maybe compared to other cities in Wisconsin?
It will be really interesting to see. I know that I was just looking at the federal map of areas that are traditionally undercounted, more broad communities. And in this area in southwestern Wisconsin, we're not considered an undercounted area. That's mostly in northern Wisconsin. So I think it may differ depending on the parts of the state. But it is interesting. You know, a census hasn't been done in 10 years. There are some new tools and ways to access the census, but it will be really interesting to see if there's if we've done a good job of promoting the census and why it's important. I'm not quite sure how we would compare to other areas, but we're doing the best we can to get the word out and promote the census.
Vanna Lee, in your work reaching out to other organizations around the state, I don't know, how do you think the La Crosse area compares to some of these other cities where you're speaking with agencies there?
Yeah, there's talk about how La Crosse in general does really well in responding, but like how accurate are those numbers and how accurate is that count? I think that's where I'm kind of at, like, oh, yeah, we do really well, or Wisconsin does really well, but, like, how accurate are those numbers when you break it down? Like, how many of those communities aren't counted? I think it's the same all over the state of Wisconsin. I think we're all kind of, we know that in our communities, I just speak specifically for the Hmong community, but, like, we know in our community that we're really undercounted and that that information doesn't reflect our community at all.
What new trends do you think we might see coming out of the 2020 census once we have this data available to us? Vanna Lee, what trends do you think we'll see?
Do you see trends as in...
I don't know. I mean, the census data captures, you know, the not only the population, but, you know, looking at race and ethnicity. I mean, do you think we'll see changes from the previous census numbers?
Yes, I think we will. Just not changes in population-wise, but I think changes in, I think having an accurate number of how many Hmong people really do live in poverty in Wisconsin specifically, and... definitely the trend in just how many Hmong people live in Wisconsin is definitely going to be a big trend.
Hedy, do you have thoughts on new trends we might see out of this 2020 census data?
Yeah, I think in Wisconsin we're going to see shifts in demographics. And the Census Bureau already puts out some annual estimates on population size and what that population looks like. But this 2020 census is going to give us solid data on what that is. I think we are going to see that racially and ethnically diverse populations are growing at a faster rate than the white population. I think we're also going to see trends in the aging population. In our community, we know that that a higher percentage of people are aging. There's some estimates on what the aging population, how many people in our community are over the age of 65 by a certain year. And I think this census is going to confirm that we have a fast-growing aging population and that that there have been big shifts in racial and ethnic diversity in our area, which is wonderful.
Bob, as we wrap up our show today, you know, I just wonder if there's something that you hope people take away from this conversation about the 2020 census, especially as they might start to, you know, receive word that, about participation.
Sure. I think the real important thing is to stand up and be counted and be sure to count everyone in your household. Your participation helps shape the future of your community, the state of Wisconsin, and our country. We also hope you'll spread the word to friends, neighbors, and colleagues that it's important to participate in the 2020 census and to encourage them to stand up and be counted. Of course, when it comes time to, you know, when you get the invitation, please try to complete the census and provide all the information as quickly as possible. Again, it's going to be easier and more convenient than ever before because of the phone, computer, and internet option. But again, you still have options to do it by mail or in person. And then lastly, if you're looking for a way to, you know, to participate and want to get involved, please look into any of our temporary positions, census, you know, and data collectors, and take advantage of the financial opportunity that's coming up.
Bob Giblin, Media Specialist for Wisconsin from the U.S. Census Bureau, Hetty Brown, Executive Director of CoolieCap, and Vannely Vang, Community Empowerment Coordinator for Giashia Incorporated, joined us today to talk about the 2020 Census and why it's important that every resident of the Coulee region responds to the survey. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Our show is produced by Senior News Editor and Producer John Davis. If you missed part of today's program, you can find the audio archives at WPR.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at WPR.org/newsmakers.